Welcome to our deep dive today. We're going to be looking at Cocktail Party Chemistry, episode 96.
Okay.
And basically turning it into like your cheat sheet on molecular electronics.
Yeah.
So basically we're talking about taking like, you know, a circuit board and shrinking it down to the size where individual molecules are doing the work of like transistors and diodes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So it's like instead of silicon chips, we're talking about circuits built with like the smallest Legos imaginable.
Right.
I can barely keep my desk organized.
Okay.
How do they even like work with something that tiny?
That's where self-assembly comes in.
Okay.
You know, episode 15 talked about DNA origami.
Right.
Kind of a similar concept here. We're not like manually placing each molecule.
Right.
We're setting up conditions where they kind of arrange themselves.
Wow.
Into the circuits we need.
Okay, that's pretty slick.
Yeah.
But why go through all this trouble?
Right.
What's the upside of a circuit so small it needs a microscope to be seen?
Well, this is where it gets really mind-bending. Molecular electronics could mean devices that use a fraction of the energy that they do now.
Okay.
So, like, imagine a phone that charges once a month.
Oh, my gosh.
And because the signals have less distance to travel,
right,
processing speeds could jump by orders of magnitude.
So no more battery anxiety and lightning-fast computers.
Exactly.
This sounded pretty good.
Yeah.
But Cocktail Party Chemistry also mentioned something about quantum effects coming into play.
Yeah.
That makes my brain hurt a little.
Yeah. That's definitely where, like, the worlds of chemistry, physics, and computer science all kind of collide.
Wow.
But basically, at these tiny scales, electrons don't always behave according to the rules we're used to.
Right.
You know, they can, like, tunnel through barriers, for example.
Right.
Which opens up all sorts of possibilities for how we design circuits.
Right.
And the kinds of computations they can perform.
So we're not just talking about smaller circuits.
Right.
But circuits that operate on entirely different principles.
Exactly.
That's huge.
Yeah.
I'm starting to see why people are so excited about this.
Yeah.
But let's back up a second.
Okay.
How can a single molecule actually be a transistor?
So it all comes down to like how electrons move within a molecule.
Okay.
So think of it like this. A molecule has different energy levels that electrons can occupy.
Okay.
By applying a voltage.
Right.
We can make those electrons jump between levels.
Kind of like how electrons in an atom have different orbitals.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now, here's the key. Depending on the molecule's structure and the voltage we apply, we can either allow or block the flow of electrons.
Right.
And that's the basic function of a transistor.
Got it.
A switch that controls electricity.
Okay.
But at the molecular level.
So each molecule is like a tiny on-off switch.
Right.
And by connecting tons of them, we can create complex circuits.
Yeah.
It's like building a computer out of microscopic Legos.
Exactly.
But are there challenges to actually doing this?
Oh, yeah, tons. I mean, these molecules are incredibly fragile, right?
Right. Incredibly small.
Yeah. So one of the biggest hurdles is stability.
Okay.
You know, these molecular components can be easily damaged by heat light.
Oh, wow.
Or even just being exposed to air.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. So finding a way to make them more robust is crucial.
Absolutely.
What about actually connecting them to the macroscopic world?
Right.
How do you wire something up that's only a few atoms wide?
Yeah. That's another massive challenge.
Yeah.
It's like trying to solder wires onto a grain of sand.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, it requires entirely new fabrication techniques.
Right.
And a lot of ingenuity.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So it's not just about the molecules themselves.
Right.
It's also about the tools and methods needed to work with them.
Exactly.
What about actually manufacturing these things on a large scale?
Right. Yeah, scalability is another hurdle.
Okay.
Right now, we're mostly creating these devices in very controlled lab settings.
Right.
You know, scaling up production to meet the demands of, say,
the smartphone industry.
Yeah.
Is a massive undertaking.
Okay. So stability, connectivity, and scalability.
Yeah.
Those are some serious challenges.
Big ones.
But despite all that, this field is moving incredibly fast.
It is. Yeah. It's really exciting.
What are scientists most excited about right now?
What
are the hot areas of research?
Well, one area that's really buzzing is the development of single molecule sensors.
Okay. Wow.
So imagine a sensor so sensitive that it can detect a single molecule of a specific substance.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
What would we use that kind of sensitivity for?
Well, think about like medical diagnostics.
Okay.
You know, these sensors could detect diseases at their earliest stages from just a drop of blood.
Really?
So no more waiting for symptoms to develop before seeking treatment.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
What other applications are we talking about?
We could use them to monitor environmental pollutants
Okay.
at incredibly low concentrations.
Well, imagine having real-time data on air and water
All
quality
right.
in remote locations.
Okay, so we've got early disease detection and environmental monitoring. Some
Yeah.
pretty compelling applications. But are there other types of sensors
Right.
beyond the single molecule ones?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You know, the term molecular sensors actually encompasses
Okay.
a wider range of sensing technologies that use molecules as the key element,
Got it.
and they all offer several advantages over traditional sensors.
Like what?
Well, for starters, their tiny size means we can put them places
Right.
traditional sensors can't go.
Okay.
Imagine sensors embedded in clothing,
Okay.
medical implants, or even directly into the human body.
That's wild.
Yeah.
It's like we're moving towards a world where sensors are everywhere,
Right.
constantly gathering information about our environment and ourselves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And molecular sensors can be incredibly sensitive,
Okay.
picking up on the smallest changes in their environment. Think about sensors that can detect a single virus particle
Oh,
or the
wow.
faintest whiff of a chemical.
Okay, so we've got size and sensitivity. What else
Yeah.
makes them special?
They can also be incredibly specific,
Oh, okay.
designed to target only the exact molecule we're interested in. It's
Right.
like having a molecular lock and key.
Great.
The sensor only responds to the presence of the specific key molecule.
So in a complex environment like the human body,
Right.
it can zero in on just the molecule we want to track.
Exactly.
That's incredible. I'm seeing how this could revolutionize healthcare
Yeah.
and so much more. What are some specific examples of how molecular sensors are being used right now?
So one exciting area is environmental monitoring.
Okay.
So scientists have developed sensors that can detect pollutants in the air and water
Okay.
at incredibly low concentrations.
Wow.
We're talking about sensors that can sniff out
Yeah.
trace amounts of toxins,
Okay.
heavy metals, or even pesticides.
That's crucial for protecting our planet.
Absolutely.
What about applications beyond environmental monitoring?
Well, these sensors can also be used to monitor nutrients in soil,
Okay.
helping farmers optimize crop yields
Wow.
and leading to more sustainable agricultural practices.
That's great.
Imagine a sensor that can essentially taste the soil
Oh, wow.
and tell farmers exactly what it needs.
So molecular sensors are helping us protect both our health and our planet.
Exactly.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And it's not just about sensing.
Right.
Molecular electronics is also making strides in data storage and processing. Remember those molecular transistors we talked about earlier?
Yeah.
Those tiny Legos that control electron flow?
Right.
Those were mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Scientists are figuring out how to arrange them
Yeah.
into complex circuits that can actually perform computations and store data.
Right.
Imagine a computer built from individual molecules.
Yeah, it's
Wait, are
amazing.
we talking about molecular computers? Computers that fit on a pinhead?
It sounds like science fiction,
Yeah, it
but
does.
it's a real area of research.
Wow.
And these molecular computers could have some serious advantages.
Like what?
Well, for one, they could be incredibly energy efficient.
Okay.
We could be talking about computers that use a tiny fraction of the energy our current devices require.
No more bulky laptops and overheating phones.
Exactly.
Sign me up.
Yeah.
What else is on the table?
They could also process information in a completely different way than traditional computers.
Okay, how so?
So our current computers rely on binary logic.
Right, zeros and ones. All right.
Exactly. But molecular computers could potentially harness the power of quantum mechanics.
Quantum computing.
Yeah.
I've heard about it,
Yeah.
but it still feels like something out of Star Trek.
It kind of
Is
is.
that even possible at the molecular level?
It's definitely in its early stages.
Okay.
But if we can crack the code of quantum computing at this scale,
Right.
it could lead to computers that are exponentially faster and more powerful than anything we have today.
Okay, I'm officially blown away.
Yeah.
So, molecular computers could be smaller, more energy efficient,
Right.
and potentially leverage quantum mechanics.
Exactly.
But are there any challenges standing in the way of making this a reality?
Of course.
Yeah.
Building complex circuits from individual molecules is incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
It's like trying to assemble a supercomputer from millions of microscopic Lego bricks.
That's quite the image.
Yeah.
What other obstacles are there?
Well, we also need to develop entirely new algorithms and software
Right.
that can work with these quantum-powered devices.
Okay.
Our current software simply won't cut it.
So it's not just about building the hardware.
Right.
It's about rethinking how we approach computation itself.
Exactly.
What about actually producing these molecular computers on a large scale?
Right. Scalability is a major challenge here.
Okay.
Just like with molecular electronics in general.
Right.
Most of what we're doing right now is happening in highly controlled lab environments. Scaling up production to meet the demands of the computer industry is a monumental task.
Okay. So it sounds like stability, connectivity, and scalability.
Yeah.
The same challenges we discussed earlier are
right.
also the big roadblocks for molecular computers.
Yeah, pretty much.
But what about data storage?
Right.
Can molecules be used for that too?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Molecular data storage is another exciting area of research.
Wow.
Imagine storing entire libraries of information
right.
on a device the size of a postage stamp.
Wait, are we talking about replacing hard drives and flash drives with molecules?
Potentially, yeah.
How's that even possible?
One promising approach is using DNA as a storage medium.
DNA?
Yeah.
You mean the stuff that makes up our genes?
Exactly. DNA is incredibly dense and stable, which makes it perfect for storing vast amounts of data
right?
in a tiny space.
Okay. I'm intrigued, but how does DNA actually store data?
So think of DNA's four bases,
okay.
A, T, C, and G,
uh-huh.
as a code similar to the binary code. Used in computers,
got it.
We can convert digital information into a sequence of these DNA bases,
okay.
and then synthesize a DNA strand containing that information.
Okay.
To retrieve the data, we sequence the DNA
uh-huh.
and translate it back into digital format.
So we're essentially writing information in the language of our genes.
Exactly.
That's mind-blowing.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
What are the advantages of using DNA for storage?
Well, first, it's incredibly dense.
Okay.
A single gram of DNA could theoretically store millions of terabytes of data.
Wow.
Compare that to your laptop's hard drive.
Right.
Which is probably only a terabyte or two.
That's a huge difference.
Yeah.
What else makes DNA a good storage medium?
It's incredibly stable.
Okay.
Under the right conditions, DNA can last for thousands of years.
Oh, wow.
Imagine archives that could outlast civilizations.
That's incredible. What about making copies of this data?
That's another advantage.
Oh.
DNA is easy to replicate using techniques like PCR,
right.
which is already widely used in biology labs.
So backing up DNA data would be relatively simple.
Yeah, very straightforward.
Okay. I'm starting to see why DNA data storage is such a hot topic.
Yeah.
But are there any drawbacks?
Of course there always are.
Okay.
Right now, the speed of writing and reading data to and from DNA is a major hurdle.
Yep.
It's still much slower than traditional data storage methods.
So it sounds like we won't be swapping out our SSDs for DNA drives anytime soon.
Probably not right away.
But scientists are actively working on making the process faster.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The other big challenge is the cost of DNA synthesis and sequencing.
Right.
It's still relatively expensive to encode and decode large amounts of data.
Yeah, it is.
So it's like any new technology.
Yeah.
It starts expensive and slow, but as research advances, we can expect to see improvements in both speed and affordability.
Exactly.
And the potential rewards are so great that scientists are determined to overcome these challenges.
Absolutely.
I can definitely see why.
Yeah.
This is all incredibly fascinating.
It is.
But I think we've covered a lot of ground here.
We have.
Maybe we should pause and pick up the conversation in part two of our deep dive.
That sounds like a great plan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Cool.
Welcome back to our deep dive into the world of molecular electronics. In part one, we explored the fundamental concepts, the challenges, and even touched on some real-world applications like sensors and data storage. Now, let's push the boundaries of our imagination and venture into the realm of the truly futuristic.
Yeah, today we're going to be talking about the potential of molecular electronics to really blur the lines
okay.
between biology and technology.
I'm ready for the next level of mind-blowing. Where do we even begin?
Well, get ready because we're going to be talking about things like biocompatible circuits,
okay.
molecular prosthetics,
wow,
and even the possibility of enhancing our cognitive abilities.
Okay, hold. Enhance our cognitive abilities.
Yeah.
Are we talking about some kind of brain booster chip
right.
made of molecules?
Kind of.
I've seen that in movies, but is that really possible?
So it's not quite as simple as plugging in a chip.
Right.
But the idea is to use molecular electronics to interface directly with the nervous system.
Wow.
And this could potentially allow us to enhance or even repair cognitive function.
Okay, that's a concept I need to wrap my head around.
Yeah.
Let's break it down. What are biocompatible circuits?
Okay.
And how are they different from the molecular electronics we talked about in part one?
So think of biocompatible circuits as molecular electronics
Okay.
that are designed to operate safely and effectively within the human body.
So we're talking about circuits that won't be rejected by the immune system or
Wow.
cause any harm to tissues.
Exactly. This means using materials and designs that are biocompatible,
Okay.
meaning they won't trigger an immune response
Right.
or release any toxic substances.
Got it.
It's a huge challenge, but the potential payoff is immense.
I can imagine. But why would we want to put circuits inside the human body in the first place?
Right.
What's the point?
Well, the possibilities are almost endless. Biocompatible circuits could lead to new types of medical implants,
Okay.
biosensors, and even prosthetics that
Wow.
can interface directly with the nervous system.
Wow, that's getting my sci-fi senses tingling.
Yeah.
Let's dive into some specifics.
Okay.
What kind of medical implants are we talking about?
So imagine implants that can monitor and regulate vital functions in real time.
So, like an implantable device that constantly tracks your blood sugar levels, heart rate, or
Yeah,
even brain activity.
exactly. And these implants could be designed to release drugs or electrical impulses as needed,
Wow.
providing personalized treatment without the need for external interventions.
It's like having a tiny doctor inside your body, constantly monitoring and adjusting things to keep you healthy.
Right.
That's incredible.
It is, and it could revolutionize the treatment of chronic diseases
Wow.
like diabetes, heart disease, and even neurological disorders like Parkinson's disease.
I'm definitely seeing the potential here.
Yeah.
What about biosensors? How are those different from the molecular sensors we talked about earlier?
So biosensors are a specific type of molecular sensor
Okay.
that are designed to detect biological molecules or processes.
Okay.
They're like specialized listening devices
Okay.
tuned in to what's happening inside living cells.
So they're like the eyes and ears of the medical world,
Right.
giving doctors real-time information about what's happening inside the body at the molecular level.
That's a great way to put it. And these biosensors could be integrated into existing medical devices or even implanted directly into the body,
Wow.
providing continuous monitoring and early detection of diseases.
This is seriously pushing the boundaries of what I thought was possible.
Yes, yeah.
What about molecular prosthetics?
Okay.
That sounds like something straight out of science fiction.
It might sound like science fiction,
Yeah.
but researchers are working towards prosthetics that can not only replace lost limbs,
Okay.
but also restore sensation and even motor control
Wow.
by interfacing directly with the nervous system.
Wait, so we're talking about prosthetics that can actually feel and move, just like
Yeah,
real
that's
limbs.
the ultimate goal.
Wow.
And while it's still early days,
Right.
progress is being made in developing molecular electronic devices that can communicate with nerve cells.
This is truly groundbreaking. It would
Amazing.
be life-changing for amputees and people with paralysis.
Absolutely. And it's not just about replacing lost limbs. Molecular prosthetics could also be used to create artificial organs,
Wow.
eyes, ears, hearts
That's incredible.
that can function seamlessly with the body.
It's mind-boggling to think that technology could one day replace or repair any damaged part of the body.
Yeah.
It really makes you think about the future of what it means to be human.
You've hit on a crucial point.
Yeah.
As this technology evolves, we need to consider the ethical and philosophical implications.
Right?
It's a conversation we can't shy away from.
Absolutely. Okay, so we've covered biocompatible circuits,
Right.
biosensors, and molecular prosthetics. Now let's talk about that elephant in the room you mentioned earlier,
Okay.
cognitive enhancement.
Yeah.
Can we really use molecular electronics to make us smarter?
That's a question generating a lot of debate and excitement.
Yeah.
But before we dive into the possibilities,
Sorry.
we need to acknowledge that the brain is incredibly complex.
Right.
We're only just beginning to understand how it works.
Right.
And any attempts to enhance cognitive function must be approached with extreme caution.
That's a good point. We don't want to mess with something as intricate as the brain without being incredibly careful.
Right.
So, what are some of the potential approaches to cognitive enhancement using molecular electronics?
So one approach involves developing devices that can stimulate specific areas of the brain.
Okay.
And this could potentially enhance memory focus or learning abilities.
So, like a brain pacemaker that can fine-tune your cognitive circuits.
It's a simplified way to think about it,
Yeah.
but the idea is to use targeted electrical or magnetic stimulation to modulate brain activity in a beneficial way.
Okay. I can see how that might work, but wouldn't it be incredibly risky to tinker with the brain's delicate circuitry?
Absolutely. Any attempt to enhance cognitive function would require rigorous safety protocols
Right.
and extensive research.
Yeah.
We're talking about potentially irreversible changes, so the stakes are incredibly high.
I can't imagine the ethical considerations involved in something like that.
Yeah.
It's a lot to think about.
It is.
Another approach to cognitive enhancement involves developing devices that can bypass damaged areas of the brain.
Right.
It's like creating neural prosthetics
yeah.
for cognitive function.
Exactly.
So for people who have suffered brain injuries or strokes, these devices could potentially restore lost cognitive abilities.
That's the hope. It's a very challenging area of research.
Right.
But it holds immense promise for improving the lives of people who have experienced brain damage.
This is all incredibly fascinating.
It is.
But I have to admit, my brain is starting to feel a bit overloaded.
I know, right?
This is a lot to take in.
It is.
Maybe we should pause here for part two.
Okay.
And let our listeners digest all this incredible information.
That sounds like a good idea. We've covered a lot of ground today.
Yeah, we have.
And there's even more to explore.
Welcome back to the final part of our deep dive into molecular electronics. Parts one and two were a wild ride through all the possibilities. I'm ready to see where we end up.
Well, strap in because we're going even further down the rabbit hole today.
I'm ready.
We're talking about molecular electronics merging with biology in ways you wouldn't believe.
Okay, so like blurring the line between tech and living things.
Exactly. Like to the point where you almost can't tell the difference.
That's both amazing and a little creepy.
It is, yeah. But let's start with something specific.
Okay.
Artificial neural networks built with molecules.
So basically circuits that work like our brains do.
Yeah, but imagine them doing complex math.
Yes.
Learning from experience, even maybe becoming aware.
Hold on, aware? Like they could actually think?
That's the big question, isn't it?
Yeah, it kind of freaks me out.
It's early days, but even the possibility is huge.
Okay, I see that. So besides freaking us out, what could these networks do?
Think medical implants that not only monitor your body, but actually fix problems.
They're way smarter than a pacemaker or something.
Right. Like, imagine stopping a seizure before it even starts.
Or helping someone walk again after an injury.
Exactly. We're talking fixing stuff at the source.
That's insane and beyond medicine.
Well, think AI that's more like us.
So robots that learn by doing.
Right. Or a virtual assistant that actually gets you.
Okay, now I'm both excited and terrified.
It's a powerful technology for sure.
Yeah, like what happens when machines are smarter than us?
That's the ethical side we can't ignore.
Definitely. We got to make sure AI helps people, not replaces them.
Exactly. So maybe this is a good spot to wrap up.
Yeah, we've covered so much ground.
We have from tiny transistors to practically rewriting life itself.
It's been a wild deep dive.
It has. And the craziest part is we're just getting started.
Molecular electronics could change everything.
Absolutely. And that's both exciting and something to think hard about.
That's the perfect note to end on, folks.
It is.
Big thanks for joining our deep dive into molecular electronics.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Check the show notes for more info, and until next time, keep those brains buzzing.